sculptor and public installation artist Gene Shin will be in conversation with me at the Recital Hall, the Performing Arts Center on the Uptown campus of the University at Albany on Thursday, November 1st. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Gene Shin to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate having you here.
Thank you, Joe. It's a pleasure.
Give us a sense of where is your work taking you these days?
Wow. Well, I've always got some upcoming projects, and I do love the challenge of working site-specifically and engaging with specific institutions. So I have an upcoming show at Storm King Art Center, which is an outdoor sculpture park, in the spring, and I'm doing some site visits out in California.
So how do you describe your work? I could certainly try, but I think, but let me have you do it, because of taking these everyday, these discarded objects and putting them into these installations. So how do you describe what you do and ultimately the impetus to create the work? And then we'll specifically talk about how you find the place and what it is that you're going to do.
Right. Well, I'm sure you would take a great stab at describing my work. Plenty of people have done that. But I would say that my engagement is really to take everyday objects, things that are in our lives that somehow has been devalued or left behind and sometimes held for different reasons. I sort of have a material exchange with community or public and transform them then into large-scale installations. So the part of my work is participatory, and some aspects of it is collaborative as well. But then it's very labor-intensive, literally transforming these objects, deconstructing them, and recontextualizing them into artworks.
I love the idea of you saying something that's devalued. You do a work with scratch-off tickets, losing scratch-off tickets.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a great example of taking something that is discarded. You obviously, the person did not win their fortune, and yet you take that and repurpose it into something that is really large.
Well, it's actually interesting because the value of that thing, right, maybe that person spent that unit $1. Some of them go up to like $5 or $10, but typically it's a $1 lotto ticket, the scratch and win tickets. And for them, they lost a dollar. But really, the gesture of that buying the ticket and right before that sensation of finding out you lost, that millisecond before that is a sense of like, I'm dreaming of this money and what it can do for me. You know, so it really holds so much more than the cost of that $1, right? And that is why people are propelled to lose that dollar, you know, lose money, in fact, because it's connected to sort of a larger hope and desire. And then what I love about it is that, in fact, our day-to-day is like that. Every action that we do maybe is, you know, thoughtful and hopeful for something greater than its task, you know. Like, I do laundry at home. I'm not thinking, like, man, my laundry needs to be clean really well. I'm doing it because, like, my family, I'm thinking about them and what their, you know, like, their future, you know. So there's always a bigger, larger vision to what the day-to-day task is. And I do think it's about dreaming and thinking about that future. So when I'm building these cities, it's also imagining all the people that are living in a major city, coming from so many different histories and places, coming together really against the odds, where everyone says, oh, it's impossible, you know. And I think of that even in my artistic life as an artist. Many people say, why did you think you could be an artist? You know, and then they tell you all the statistics, which I know very well, that it's impossible to make a living, that, you know, so little percentages actually have a future, let alone career, let alone able to sustain their practice. You know, it goes on. So there's a lot of naysayers, and yet you feel compelled to sort of lunge into that. And that is a lot of hard work and repetition and discipline to keep going. And I feel like the city is like that. There's so many great ideas out there that don't happen. And there's over time, a city is built on really great foundation involving a lot of hands and labor.
When you look at the idea, the installation, you were mentioning that you're going to be going on site visits. So when you see the site, do you always have, is the item ever in mind prior to the site, or does the site lead to what you would like to build with?
Usually the site leads me. I probably have an inventory of things I'm sort of attracted to, have wanted to do a project with, many failed proposals too that never got placed, things that just I tinker around in my studio in my day-to-day life that I'm interested in placing. But they're just sort of, you know, in the back of my mind. I go there really open-minded to see and figure out what seems to be happening at the site, what seems to be something that they're kind of hopeful about or struggling with or dealing with, and a thread of a conversation that maybe I want to pick up with them.
I found it fascinating. There's a sculpture that you did for the Brooklyn Academy of Music, BAM, which is a wave of records. So that is cool enough in and of itself. But the fact that it's 78 records, that it's 78 RPM, That is very specific, and I'm interested of how that guides you versus just throwing in a 45 or throwing in a 33.
You know, it's interesting because sometimes I think objects find you. I wasn't necessarily seeking the 78 records, but I did have this project at the Brooklyn Academy of Music, and I was thinking about music production and the difference between a visual artist and a performance artist, and really that heightened experience of performance and its engagement with the audience, which is so different than my engagement as a visual artist. So I was sort of taking on this idea of a kind of how could I make a physical sound wave? How could I make this awesome structure that doesn't feel like it will be there permanently, you know, but suggest that there's the next phase, you know. But then as I was doing this, literally the collection of 78 found me. Sadly, it was through my family, my in-laws, my husband's grandfather passed away. And in that passing, they discovered his whole entire basement was full of his collection of 78s. Every single record he's collected, he never threw anything out. And so it was a marker of his personal music collection, which I wanted to preserve and hold onto, because it was like, here's this lifespan of one person, and I wanted to literally think of one wave that would surge and come up and be awesome and then, again, pass, be still again. So there felt like a cycle of life, like the records playing over and over again, but then at some point they're no longer useful. We don't even play them, and technology has moved on. You know, we don't have the vehicles to even, you know, have a record player to like listen to this music, you know, and yet they're readily available, right? So life has moved on, and yet there is such a sentimental attachment to the collection that he held on to.
And again, an idea of an object that has been discarded and devalued.
Yes, right. It held so much for him. I'm sure every single record he could talk about when he got it, why he got it, what he was into, you know, what he was doing in his life, you know. So many stories embedded in every record. And then accumulations of an entire life, decades of record listening and a valuable collection, only to him, right? To anyone else, it's broken, it's cracked, this technology is old, so it is completely devalued. But I still think culturally there's so much we can learn from that, our habits of collecting, our habits of moving on. You know.
And you like exploring that idea of the cycle, it seems.
Yes, I feel like it is a cycle, and that I'm constantly hoping that the cycle keeps going. Right? I think we're in a culture of easy, convenience, disposable, kind of, you know, our bad habits. And it's so convenient for us to buy something and get rid of it the minute we're done using it. And I just think of what will that have as a larger impact globally. These objects don't go away. They're just not with us in our immediate visual space, but they're somewhere. If they're not contributing something positive, they're definitely contributing something negative.
Gene Chin will be in conversation with me on Thursday, the 1st of November at the Recital Hall and the Performing Arts Center at the University at Albany, UAlbany Uptown. It's part of the Creative Life, a conversation series at UAlbany. Gene Chin, I look forward to speaking with you and talking a lot more about visual art on the radio.
Me too. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. I look forward to it. Gene Chin, sculptor and public installation artist, will be in conversation with me at the Recital Hall and the Performing Arts Center at UAlbany. It's part of the Creative Life series, a conversation series at UAlbany. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.